If there's one thing that will change your life as a new parent more than anything else, it's this. Not the feeding, not the nappy changes, not even the sheer volume of tiny socks you'll mysteriously lose. It's sleep. Or more accurately, the catastrophic, soul-crushing, relationship-threatening lack of it.
Welcome to Claude Talks. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Emma. And Ryan, I need you to know something before we start. I recorded my portion of today's intro 3 times because I kept forgetting what I was saying mid-sentence. My daughter is 8 months old. I have not slept properly since June.
Emma, I see you. I have been you. My son is 3 now, and I look back at that first year and I genuinely don't know how I functioned. The answer, by the way, is I didn't. Not really.
So today we're talking about baby and toddler sleep, why it matters so much, what actually goes wrong, what the science says, and the practical stuff that actually helps. Because there is a lot of noise out there and parents are exhausted, and the last thing you need is more conflicting advice when you're running on 4 hours of broken sleep.
Exactly. So let's start with the part nobody talks about enough, what sleep deprivation actually does to you as a parent. Because I think people treat it like a badge of honor, like, oh yeah, we're exhausted, that's just parenting. And it is. But it's also genuinely dangerous.
I didn't know how bad it was until I was in it. Like, I knew it would be hard. But I didn't know that at 6 weeks postpartum I would be standing in the kitchen at 3 a.m. genuinely unable to remember how to make a cup of tea. A thing I have done approximately 10,000 times.
The research on sleep deprivation is pretty alarming when you actually look at it. Being awake for 17 hours straight, which is a mild night for a new parent, impairs your cognitive function to the same degree as a blood alcohol level of 0.05%. Stay awake for 24 hours and you're at 0.1%. That's legally drunk in most places.
So I have essentially been operating as a drunk person for 8 months. That explains a lot.
Decision-making collapses first. Then emotional regulation. Then short-term memory, which is why you're standing in kitchens forgetting how tea works. And then there's the relationship piece, which is the one nobody warns you about. Sleep deprivation makes you snappy, irritable, and completely unable to see your partner's perspective. And they're in the same state. It's a recipe for conflict.
My husband and I had an argument at 2 in the morning about who was more tired. We were both too tired to have the argument properly, so it just sort of dissolved into exhausted silence, which might actually be the most efficient conflict resolution technique.
Laughs, honestly, yes. But here's the thing, it's not just about the parents. Sleep matters just as much for the baby. Maybe more.
Right. And I think there's this instinct, especially as a new mom, to feel like if the baby is awake, they're awake and that's fine. But that's not how it works.
Not at all. Baby sleep is when the brain does most of its heavy lifting. Memory consolidation happens during sleep, the things they practiced during the day, the faces they saw, the sounds they heard, all of that gets processed and filed away during sleep. Growth hormone is primarily released during sleep. And emotional processing, the regulation of all those big feelings that babies have, that happens during sleep too.
So it's not downtime, it's active development.
Exactly. A sleeping baby is a baby whose brain is working hard. Which is why consistently disrupted sleep in infancy is associated with developmental delays and behavioral issues down the line. This isn't meant to scare anyone, one bad night doesn't matter. But it's why chronic sleep deprivation in babies is something worth taking seriously and actually trying to fix.
Okay, so I want to ask you about the 4-month sleep regression because, Ryan, I was not prepared. Like, I thought I'd gotten through the newborn phase, things were getting slightly better. And then at exactly 4 months, it was like someone flipped a switch and my baby stopped sleeping entirely.
The 4-month regression is one of the most common things I hear new parents talk about, and it's also one of the most misunderstood. Because it's not actually a regression in the sense that it goes away. It's a permanent change.
That's very alarming to say.
Hear me out. Up until about 4 months, babies have very simple sleep architecture, they basically cycle between light sleep and deep sleep. At around 4 months, their brains mature and they develop adult-like sleep cycles. Which means they now cycle through light sleep, deep sleep, REM, back to light sleep, every 45 to 60 minutes or so.
Which is when they wake up.
Right. Because at the end of each cycle, there's a brief partial arousal. Adults do this too, we just don't notice because we've learned to fall back asleep on our own. Babies haven't learned that yet. So if falling asleep required a specific condition, being fed, being rocked, having a dummy, they wake up between cycles expecting that same condition again. At 1 a.m. At 3 a.m. At 4:30 a.m.
That is exactly what happened. She was waking up every 45 minutes. Every 45 minutes.
And that's why it feels like a regression, because suddenly you have a baby who was maybe doing a 4-hour stretch, and now they're waking up every cycle all night long. It's not that they've gone backwards. It's that their brain has matured to the point where you can actually now teach them to sleep independently. Which brings us to sleep training.
Okay, sleep training. The most controversial two words in parenting.
Laughs, which is wild, because the controversy is largely based on a misunderstanding of what sleep training actually is.
Walk me through it.
So sleep training is not torture. Sleep training is not abandoning your baby. Sleep training is teaching a child to fall asleep independently at the start of sleep, so that when they wake between cycles, they have the skills to resettle themselves without needing you. That's it. That's the goal.
Because if they can fall asleep at 7 p.m. on their own, they can fall back asleep at 1 a.m. on their own.
Exactly. The methods differ in how you get there. Let's go through the main ones. First, and probably the most well-known, is FERBA, or graduated extinction. This is often mislabeled as cry it out, but it's not. With FERBA, you put your baby down drowsy but awake, leave the room, and then go back in at increasing intervals, typically 5 minutes, then 10, then 15, to briefly reassure them without picking them up or feeding them. You're not ignoring them. You're checking in. The idea is that the intervals give them an opportunity to practice settling, but you're still present.
I've heard a lot of people say FERBA is cruel, that the cortisol, the stress hormone, spikes and it damages the baby.
This is where the research is really interesting. Because there have been multiple well-designed studies now, and a 2023 meta-analysis that pulled together a bunch of them, and the conclusion is clear, there is no evidence that sleep training, including FERBA, increases cortisol long-term, causes attachment problems, or leads to behavioral issues. The studies that claimed otherwise had significant methodological problems. The 2023 meta-analysis was comprehensive and the finding was, sleep training is safe.
That's actually reassuring to hear stated that clearly.
It should be. Moving on, full extinction, which is associated with Dr. Mark Weissbluth. This is the one that is genuinely cry it out, you put the baby down, you leave, you don't go back until morning or their scheduled feed time. No check-ins. It's the most controversial method, and it's also the fastest. Most families see dramatic improvement within 3 to 5 nights. And here's the thing, the research outcomes are the same as FERBA. No long-term harm found.
I cannot personally imagine doing full extinction. The not going in at all would break me.
Lots of parents feel that way. And that's fine, it's why there are other options. The fading or chair method is at the other end of the spectrum. You start by sitting next to your baby's cot until they fall asleep. Then each night, or every few nights, you move the chair slightly further away. Eventually you're in the doorway, and then you're gone. It's much slower, can take a couple of weeks, but many parents find it emotionally easier because they're still present.
And then there's the no-cry methods. I read Elizabeth Pantelis' book.
The No-Cry Sleep Solution. Yes. The no-cry approach works for some families, particularly those with babies who aren't massively dependent on sleep associations. It requires very consistent execution over a longer period, often 4 to 6 weeks, and for some babies it just doesn't shift the underlying issue. But if your baby is a mild case and you want to avoid any protest, it's worth trying first.
I tried it. Our daughter was not a mild case.
Laughs, noted. The key point across all of these methods is the same, you're teaching the baby that they can fall asleep without your active help. The discomfort, and yes, there is some discomfort involved, is temporary. It's not suffering, it's learning. We let kids struggle through learning to walk, to talk, to feed themselves. This is the same principle.
When can you actually start? Because I know people who started sleep training at 8 weeks and people who say you shouldn't do it until a year.
The consensus from most pediatricians is 4 to 6 months. Under 4 months, their brains haven't made that sleep architecture shift yet, and physiologically they do still need night feeds, so sleep training before then isn't appropriate. At 4 to 6 months, most healthy babies can physiologically sustain longer stretches without feeding. The sleep architecture change has happened, and they're developmentally ready to learn independent settling.
Okay, let's talk about the practical environment stuff because I feel like I got this wrong early on.
The sleep environment is massively underrated. Three things: darkness, temperature, and white noise.
We had curtains. Not blackout curtains, just curtains. And in summer it would be light at 5 a.m. and, yeah.
Blackout blinds are one of the most cost-effective sleep interventions you can make. Darkness triggers melatonin production. Even dim light suppresses it. This matters for naps especially. A dark room significantly extends nap duration. Get the blackout blinds.
Noted. 2 months too late, but noted.
Temperature. The optimal sleep temperature for babies is 18 to 20 degrees Celsius. Slightly cooler than most people keep their houses. Overheating is a SIDS risk factor, but it also just disrupts sleep. Cool room, appropriate sleep sack for the season.
And white noise.
White noise masks household sounds, a dog barking, a door closing, older siblings. It also creates a consistent auditory environment that cues sleep. There's good evidence it helps, and it's very safe as long as you're not running it at excessive volume right next to the cot. A machine across the room at a reasonable level is fine.
Okay, I want to talk about wake windows because this was genuinely transformative for me when I learned about it.
Wake windows are the single most practical piece of sleep knowledge for new parents. The idea is simple: a baby can only handle a certain amount of awake time before they become overtired. And overtired babies are harder to settle, not easier. The old instinct of keeping a baby awake to make them tired, it backfires catastrophically.
I did this. I thought if I kept her up longer she'd sleep better. She screamed for 45 minutes at bedtime instead of going down in 10.
Classic overtired trap. Because when a baby is overtired, their body floods with cortisol, the stress hormone, which is stimulating. They're wired and miserable at the same time. You want to catch them in the sweet spot. For newborns, wake windows are 45 to 60 minutes. Basically, they should be going back to sleep almost immediately after waking. At 3 months, about 90 minutes. At 6 months, around 2 to 2.5 hours. At 12 months, around 3 to 4 hours.
The 6-month wake window is the one I'm working with now. 2 hours max before she needs to go down. Once I started actually timing it, bedtimes got so much easier.
It's genuinely one of those things that feels almost too simple. Just watch the clock. Don't let them stay up too long.
Bedtime routine. Tell me about yours because you've mentioned it before and it sounds almost therapeutic.
Laughs, it became therapeutic, honestly. The goal of a bedtime routine is to signal to the brain, sleep is coming. You want something consistent, same sequence, same time, same duration. About 20 to 30 minutes. The classic is bath, feed, book, dark room. Bath is slightly stimulating, but then the body temperature drop afterwards actually promotes drowsiness. Feed, but critically, not as the last thing before sleep. Then a book or quiet song in a dim room. Then into the cot.
The order matters.
Somewhat. The key thing is that feeding shouldn't be the last step, because then you've made feeding the sleep association. We'll come back to that. But broadly, yes, consistent sequence, dim lighting by the end, quiet voices, and then down in the cot.
Let's talk about drowsy but awake, because this phrase, I've heard it so many times and I didn't understand what it meant for ages.
It's the foundational principle of independent sleep. When you put your baby down drowsy but awake, they experience falling asleep in their cot. That means when they wake between sleep cycles at 2 a.m., the cot is a familiar place, it's where sleep happens. If you put them down fully asleep, they wake between cycles in the same place they were when they fell asleep, your arms, your chest, and that's what they expect. The panic you sometimes see when a baby wakes at night is partly, I was somewhere else when I fell asleep, what is this?
Okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. So drowsy but awake means they have to do the final work of falling asleep themselves.
Exactly. Heavy-lidded, calm, clearly tired, but not out. That's the window. It can be a narrow window. Some babies protest it initially. But it's the foundation everything else builds on.
Nap transitions. Talk me through this because I feel like every time I think I've got naps figured out, something changes.
Naps are basically in constant flux for the first 3 years. Newborns sleep roughly every 45 to 60 minutes, so they're taking 4 or 5 naps a day. Around 4 months, which is also the regression time, conveniently, they start consolidating to 3 naps. Then between 6 and 8 months, most babies drop to 2 naps. That 2-nap schedule usually holds until around 15 to 18 months when they go to 1 nap. And then somewhere around 2.5 to 3 years, they drop napping entirely.
We are between 2 and 1 naps right now and it is chaos. Some days she needs 2, some days she seems fine with 1, and I never know which day it's going to be.
That transition period is the roughest. The strategy is to watch for the signs, taking longer to fall asleep for naps, fighting naps, or the second nap being so late it pushes bedtime. When you see those consistently, you start transitioning. Early days you may need a very early bedtime to compensate. Like, 6 p.m. Don't be scared of an early bedtime.
Night feeds. I want to address this because I think there's a lot of confusion about when night feeds are necessary versus when they're habit.
Really important distinction. Under 4 months, feed on demand, no sleep training, night feeds are almost certainly still genuinely needed. Babies that age have small stomachs and need calories around the clock.
After 4 months?
Between 4 and 6 months, it gets more nuanced. Many babies can physiologically sustain a longer stretch, 5-6 hours, without feeding. But if they've been fed to sleep every time they've woken, they may wake out of habit rather than hunger. Habit feeds feel urgent, the baby cries, you feed, they settle immediately and fall back asleep, but they go back to sleep very quickly and don't seem particularly hungry. A genuinely hungry baby will feed properly and take a full feed.
So how do you tell the difference?
Watch the feed. Is the baby actively nursing or taking a full bottle? Hunger. Are they lazily sucking for 2 minutes and back asleep? Habit. After 6 months, most healthy babies on solid food do not nutritionally need night feeds. Which doesn't mean you have to eliminate them. Plenty of families continue night feeds well past 6 months and that's fine. But if night waking is a problem, the feeds are often perpetuating it.
Let's do common mistakes because I have made all of them.
Same. Most parents have. Number 1, keeping the baby awake to tire them out. We've covered this. Overtired equals harder to sleep. Trust the wake windows.
I did this for the first 2 months. I'm so sorry, Lily.
Number 2, feeding to sleep as the only sleep association. Feeding your baby is wonderful. Feeding your baby and then feeding them again and again every time they wake at night because it's the only thing that works, that's a dependency loop. The issue isn't the feeding. It's that it becomes the only way they can sleep.
I have definitely been in this loop. I am currently in this loop, honestly.
The fix is drowsy but awake and letting them build other associations, the routine, the room, the white noise. And number 3, and this one is crucial, inconsistency. This is the worst mistake you can make during sleep training or even just while trying to improve sleep. If some nights you hold out and let them settle, and other nights you go in and feed and rock them to sleep, you have taught them that if they cry long enough, something changes. That's the worst possible lesson. It makes the crying worse and longer because they're still hoping.
Which is why if you start a method, you have to commit.
Yes. Pick your approach, understand it, get buy-in from your partner so you're doing the same thing, and be consistent. 3 to 7 nights of hard is almost always followed by a dramatic improvement. The parents who have the worst experience with sleep training are usually the ones who tried, had a rough night, gave in, tried again a week later, and so on. Their babies learn that persistence pays off.
Okay, let me just say, for anyone listening who is in the thick of it right now, who is running on nothing, who had a 6-month-old who doesn't understand the concept of sleep, I see you. This is genuinely hard. It is one of the hardest things I have done. And I say that as someone who has had a reasonably functional career and done some objectively hard things.
It's an endurance test. And the lack of sleep makes everything worse, your mood, your relationship, your capacity to think clearly. Which is exactly when you need to think clearly enough to implement changes. It's brutal timing.
But, and here's the thing, it is fixable. That's what I want people to take away from this. Sleep is a skill. It can be taught. Doesn't have to be this way forever.
It really doesn't. My son slept through the night reliably from about 7 months. It took about a week of very hard nights. And then it was done. And I got my brain back, my wife and I stopped snapping at each other, and I could actually enjoy him during the day instead of just surviving.
That's the goal. Surviving becomes living again.
Exactly. So let's give people the quick framework to actually start. 1. Get the environment right first. Blackout blinds, 18 to 20 degrees, white noise. Do this regardless of what method you choose.
2. Understand and respect wake windows. Don't let your baby stay awake too long. Watch the clock.
3. Establish a consistent bedtime routine. 20 to 30 minutes, same sequence every night. Bath, feed, book, dark room. Feed is not the last step.
4. Put your baby down drowsy but awake. That's the goal, even if it takes a few tries.
5. Choose a sleep training method that fits your family and commit to it for at least a week. Don't switch halfway. Don't give in on night 3.
6. Address night feeds separately if needed. If your baby is over 6 months and healthy, most waking is habit, not hunger. You may need to gradually stretch the feeds or eliminate them to see proper improvement.
And 7, and this is the meta advice, get your partner aligned. You will not do this successfully if one of you is going in every time the baby stirs and the other one is trying to hold out. You have to be a team.
We are currently working on this. My husband has a slightly lower threshold for going in than I do.
Laughs, have the conversation during the day, when you're both rested, relatively, and can talk about it rationally. Agree on the plan. Write it down if that helps. And then execute it together.
That's the episode. Sleep, why it matters, what goes wrong, and how to actually fix it. We haven't solved parenting today, but hopefully we've made it slightly less terrible.
Which is really all any of us can aim for. Get the blackout blinds. Watch the wake windows. Commit to the method. Your future self will thank you from their full night's sleep.
That's Claude Talks. I'm Emma.
I'm Ryan. Go take a nap.
Laughs, we'll see you next time.